is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, our partners over at Dr. Dish Basketball have just unveiled their 2021 Dr. Dish Holiday Bundle. Order now and you'll get a Dr. Dish home shooting machine, a free phone mount, a free t-shirt, a free Dr. Dish basketball, and a donation will be made to Special Olympics Minnesota. Plus, right now, you can save $150 when you enter Fast Break at checkout. Visit drdishbasketball.com for more details. This offer is good till November 19th, so order your Dr. Dish holiday bundle today.
Hi, this is Asim Rastogi from Essential Coaching, and you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit QuickCut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host, Jason Sunkel. Jumping on to talk some NBA tonight, Jay. We thought we would kind of go through the tiers of the NBA as they stand right now.
Yes, that sounds good. But Mike, it's back. Name the team this person has started for this season. We have to start the podcast with this. We haven't done it yet. I didn't feel okay. I wasn't comfortable doing it yet, because like when you're playing like five games, oh, this guy started two games. I didn't feel like this was fair. But I've got some guys here, one of which I didn't even know this person was in the NBA. And he's
how many guys you have? How many do I have to guess?
I picked two.
Just two? Oh, that's putting a lot of pressure on me to get one right out of two. All right, here we go. Let's see what you got.
This guy has started seven games, Mike.
Seven games, okay. So he started approximately half of his team's games. Okay.
Herb Jones.
He plays for – he's a rookie, correct, I believe, if I'm not mistaken? No? Yes?
I don't know the answer. I didn't do any stat research on this person. Hold on. I will tell you. Just give me 1 second. Herb Jones. He is – he is a rookie out of Alabama.
See, I'm not that far off. I think. Oh man, Memphis.
No. Let me give you a hint.
Give me the conference.
Western Conference.
Western Conference team.
I'll give you another hint.
No, I don't need that. That's it. That should be enough. Herb Jones, Western Conference team. The Well, it's got to be, oh, man, Pelicans?
It is the Pelicans. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Now, I'm going with another one here, Mike. This one's going to be a little more difficult. He's only started two games.
Okay.
For his team. Okay, I'm just pulling up stats on this person so I can make sure I answer this question. This player is in his... He's also a rookie. Alperen Sengun.
Oh, that's easy, man. Houston.
Oh, look at you.
He's from Turkey.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm impressed.
He was the 15th pick, 14th pick, somewhere
listen,
in there.
Like listen, 15th I, pick. He listen, I couldn't have been able to pick him out of a lineup.
Well, you might not be able to pick out a lot of the Houston roster unless it just
you're Kevin Porter to pin Jr.
Up,
pin, throwing
pin up losses,
throwing food across the floor.
I don't know. I don't know. Houston's so a mess.
That, so there's the two names I had, and you were one for two, and you only took two guesses on Herb Jones.
I was
so
one and a half. I was one and a half for two. I knew he was a rookie.
We don't give half credit.
I knew he was a rookie.
Okay,
give me credit for that.
Great. Okay, so what we're gonna do is we're gonna each pick a team in each conference. I think right is that what we're gonna do? We'll each pick a team in the top six, and we'll talk about them, and maybe pick two teams. But we'll see where we go from there. And we're gonna start with the. Do you want to start with the Eastern Conference, Mike?
Yeah, let's start East.
Okay, well, I'm gonna pick Cleveland because I just want to talk about the Cavs. So let's talk about the Cavs. So. I think that the next 2 weeks are going to be really, really disastrous for the Cavs. Mobley out 2 to 4 weeks, elbow sprain, Colin Sexton out. You know, Kevin Love's returned to team, being in the team environment, but it doesn't seem like he's any closer to playing. Lauri Markkanen hasn't even returned to the team environment as of yesterday's game.
So they were both working on their conditioning is what I read.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe Lauri Markkanen's back, but I didn't see him on the bench, but... Listen, I mean, obviously that means that they had to be symptomatic, right? Because they weren't able to do anything, I would assume. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, it seems I don't know exactly what the protocol is calling for at this point and where those guys exactly were. Obviously, we don't know all the details.
Yeah.
But it seems like they've been out for a pretty significant amount of time and that they're working their way back awfully slowly.
Yeah, and then, okay, so then, which I mean, maybe that's what they have to do. I mean, I don't know, did Embiid come back yet?
I don't think so. I don't think he's back yet. So they're playing right now.
They're getting smoked.
I don't think he's playing. I don't think he's back yet.
No, they're not. He's not back yet. Embiid, Drummond got the start, so there you go. So Embiid's not back. Tobias Harris is back, though.
Yeah, he's been back for a while. He's been back a couple games now.
So, anyways, so sorry, you mean to go to another team, but I think like the Cavs' schedule is rough the next few weeks, and I was excited to see like how they were going to react with these games. Like tomorrow, they play the Nets. Okay, which I mean, maybe they can win that game. I don't know. I doubt it though. Thursday, they're home against the Warriors. That's over. That's a game. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm writing them off. Like I'm writing them off on those games. Sunday. No, we don't. We don't. So we play Wednesday, Thursday. They play the Nets again after that. So it's like, yikes. And then they play the Suns. So those are the next five games. And I mean, if we walk away with one win there.
The schedule doesn't look good through December 8th. Let's put it that way.
If we can. Well, they got an Orlando game in there, right?
That's it, though. You got Brooklyn, Golden State, Brooklyn, Phoenix, Orlando, Dallas, Miami, Washington, Utah, Milwaukee, Chicago.
Yeah, those man, not having Mobley.
Yeah, that hurts. And if Markkanen and Love aren't back,
and Allen didn't play, didn't play yesterday. I mean, because he was sick, right, or something. He was sick.
Yes,
but not COVID.
Correct.
So hopefully he's back. I mean, listen, do I think they could win one? So one of the next five, do I think they could win Brooklyn, one of the Brooklyn Warriors, Brooklyn Suns? I don't remember what the other team was.
Orlando.
Yeah. Well, they should win Orlando. I'm not worried about Orlando. There's another game in there. What's the other one? I feel like. Oh, no, I guess that's right. Those four, I feel like they can win one of those games. So if they can win one of the games and stay and be 10 and 10-9, I think I'm happy, right? We happy if we win one of those games, Mike?
One besides the Orlando game?
Well, not counting the Orlando game. I'm talking about the other four.
One of the next four? Yeah, I think you'd probably be happy. You got three games. Golden State, Brooklyn, and Phoenix are all at home, so you got to figure you can get one of those.
Yeah, and I think one of those other teams is going to have an off night with Phoenix. I mean, theoretically, maybe Harden takes the night off tomorrow for rest because they play tonight. You know that, so maybe one of them takes off tomorrow night because they're resting them or whatever. I mean, they lost the Warriors. I guess they didn't play
I think they took a rest tonight.
For fourth quarter?
For the whole game, man.
Durant, they played 32 minutes.
A good performance by Brooklyn.
Dude, listen, I know we're jumping between teams here, but is there any question right now Steph's the MVP? I mean, is there a doubt right this second? Like, say we are crowning the person right now. Is it Steph? It's got to be, right? Their team is 12-2. I mean, they're not just beating teams; they're decimating them. I mean,
yeah, I think at this point he probably is. I think statistically, you could probably make a case that Jokic, Durant, and Giannis have been his equal, if not better than him statistically. But from a narrative and the fact that they're 12-2. I was thinking about this today, and I know we're jumping off the Cavs, and I'm disappointed with Mobley going out, and hopefully it's going to be closer to that 2 weeks and that 4 weeks. They're going to have a hard time staying afloat without him and without Sexton. I just don't know what to make of where the Cavs are at. That schedule through December 8th is absolutely brutal, and I think once they come out of that, if they can somehow squeeze out a couple of wins, then maybe – things start to turn around once you get to the rest of December. The schedule softens up a little bit, but that is a rough, rough, rough stretch that they're going to be hard pressed. They're going to have to play really well to win some of those games, especially if they don't have Mobley and Sexton for that entire time. But Golden State, I was thinking about it today, and you start looking at what's the difference between this team this year and last year. And obviously Steph was injured for part of last season, which helps to explain part of the reason why they ended up in the play-in. And when he came back near the end of the season, and they were a much, much, much better team. But still, you look at this team and you say, okay, they're 12-2. They're the best team to this point in the league. Their starters are Kevon Looney, okay, Jordan Poole, who's obviously much improved, but not necessarily a guy that people around the league think is – he's not a household name, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Andrew Wiggins, reclamation project. Wiggins, I think, has been probably better, I would say, than most people thought he was going to be when he went to Golden State. But certainly he's not – it's not number one overall pick Andrew Wiggins. You're still not getting that type of player. Andrew Wiggins is still an average, maybe a slightly above average – NBA player. And then you just look at the rest of their team. I mean, should Otto Porter and bringing back Iguodala, I mean, are these guys really making that much of a difference? Gary Payton the second. It's just, I can't really figure out or put my finger on what it is. And I think it just comes down to
culture, Mike.
Partly, but I think it also comes down to Steph, just what he does. He affects the game in so many ways that you just can't measure, that you can't look at statistics and say, oh, here's where his impact is bigger or smaller. And obviously he has all the statistics to back it up, whether it's counting stats or advanced numbers and all the things that the Golden State offense does when he's on the floor that sort of crater when he's off the floor. But he does so many things that don't even show up, I think, in those statistics, and just the way that he bends the defense, creates openings for other people. And teams are just scared to death of him. Wherever he goes, it's constantly panic mode. You got two or three guys running at him. They're trying to switch, and then it ends up breaking down and giving easy baskets to other guys. But it's still, I still look at the roster and I just think it just doesn't make sense. But then you go back to their championship year, and sure, Clay's not there, but they win 73 games with, again, it's basically Curry, Draymond, and Clay are the drivers behind that. And they had role players around there, and you had Iguodala. But I don't know. I just look at this team, and I'm not. I find myself. I have a hard time wrapping my head around them being a title contender. It sounds stupid. It sounds completely stupid. But for some reason, I guess my fear of the Warriors, they were just so dominant when they had Durant that I feel like you take Durant off this team and I can't take them seriously at this point for some reason. And I know I'm wrong, but even in saying that, I know I'm wrong, but I can't get my head around them as a title contender. I don't know how you feel about it right now.
I mean, I think I can buy into the title contender thing if Clay gets healthy. You know, they kind of remind me, Mike, in a sense. I don't want to say they're the same, because I kind of feel like they're a fake contender as it's currently constructed, and they're winning games right now. They kind of remind me of the Atlanta Hawks. Remember that year that all five Atlanta Hawks players
Yes.
made the All-Star team? Like, they were successful all season. They did really great things. Who was the coach? Oh, Budenholzer. Anyways, right? He was Budenholzer was the coach, right?
Yes.
I'm not completely off.
Yes.
All right. So I think they kind of have a lot of the same – I smell the same aroma in the air about the team. Like, do I think they could possibly do something? I think they could. Now, Clay comes back, Mike. I truly believe that team's a title contender. If he comes back and is even like
– But what's he really going to be? How good can he be coming off a torn ACL and a torn Achilles? Now, I know Durant has basically come back and looks exactly the same as he did before the injury. And
listen,
maybe
Mike,
the surgery has just gotten better, but man, I don't know.
My argument, Mike, is if he can come out and play 20 to 25 minutes, stand and play, shoot three pointers, and I mean, he's better than some of these other names you just said. I mean, would I rather him play than – I mean, here's my question. Would I rather him play than – like, would you rather have him have 10 of Andrew Wiggins' minutes, or would you rather have Andrew Wiggins, Klay Thompson, and Steph all on the floor at the same time and give those other guys a blow? Like,
I think Klay's still going to be able to shoot, right? I mean, that's one thing that – that's a skill that's not going to go away.
His defense is the concern, because he's always been a pretty solid, very good two-way player. And –
For sure. And I think that was one of the keys to Golden State's ability to win and an ability to put a good defense on the floor was Klay is just an outstanding defensive player. And so usually he's on the best perimeter player, quote unquote, whereas Draymond is on a big man or is able to switch and play multiple positions. I think that switchability with Draymond and with Klay Thompson helped to make up for Steph's lack of size and being an average defensive player when they were really good. Those two guys were really locked in defensively. And that's where you wonder if Klay's decreased athleticism as a result of the injuries could have an effect. I mean, there's no doubt he's going to step on the floor and be able to shoot the ball from day one. The question is, what does he look like on the other end of the floor? And I think your fake contender is kind of where I go with this right now. I just don't see – I look at this roster – and I think about teams that have won NBA titles in recent years, and I just don't think this team is as good as those teams. And maybe that's discrediting what Steph is able to do. Maybe it's discrediting these other guys that are role players. But I just don't see them right now as a team that I think can win an NBA title. And I don't think Klay is going to come back as 100% Klay. I don't know if he's 50%. I don't know if he's 80%. But I know he's not going to be the same guy that he was, having sat out for 2 years and gone through two what are potentially career-ending or at least career-threatening injuries. So it'll be interesting to keep watching this team. They've had kind of a soft schedule to this point. They played a lot of home games. So they've played 9 home games, I believe, and only 5 games on the road. So they've had an easy schedule. Now, beating Brooklyn tonight in Brooklyn, I don't think is an easy game, especially because Brooklyn seemingly had been playing a little bit better. So it's hard to discount it, but man, I don't know. I don't see them as a title contender.
Yeah, right now I think they're a pretender. I mean, they are number one. I mean, looking at their schedule, I don't know. I mean, beating Chicago by 26 points, I don't think
that's... They've crushed teams. They've crushed
teams. And it was Chicago. Chicago's no slouch, okay? Charlotte's not been very good this year. Houston's not been very good. Atlanta's been not very good. The Minnesota win, looking better and better every time Minnesota steps on the floor. I mean, Minnesota's looked pretty good. They did beat Oklahoma City twice. That's not really impressive. They beat the Clippers. They beat the Lakers, and that was the first game of the regular season for them.
So Lakers went impressive?
I mean, it was the first game of the regular season. Everyone was playing.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
You know, and the two things that I do want to point out is the two losses they have. They lost by three and they lost by four. So it's not like – and both those games come down to the wire. And yeah, most of their wins haven't come down to the wire. They've been blowing everyone out.
They've been the best team to this point. If you were conducting a college football style AP poll, I think Golden State is clearly at this point, they're the number one team. But I don't know that I would favor them if the playoffs started today. I don't think they would be my top choice to come out as NBA champions over the course of 4 or 7-game series. So we'll see what happens. Steph's been unbelievable. As far as that MVP race, I think, yeah, if you ended it today, I think Steph's the MVP. But I think those other three guys, Jokic, Giannis, and Durant, have also established themselves as tremendous candidates just based on their statistical profile and what they've been able to do. And we'll see where their teams end up. And that's obviously going to play a real factor in how that MVP vote finishes. And you would expect Milwaukee's a little bit down right now. You expect them to turn it around. Brooklyn's been playing better up until tonight. And Denver, sort of like the Cavs, are kind of hanging on without Jamal Murray and without Michael Porter Jr., who looks like that might have been one of my worst preseason calls for Michael Porter Jr. as most improved player. He's been either terrible or injured, so not a good sign for Denver. But Jokic has been unbelievable, just carrying them.
Yep. Okay, Mike, so you want to talk about an Eastern Conference team. So we've talked about one Eastern Conference and one Western Conference now. If we talk Cleveland and Golden State, you want to talk about another Eastern Conference team? Is there one you want to talk about?
If I'm looking at the top tier in the East, I guess, I mean, I think we have to talk Washington, right? 10-3, and nobody.
They should be 9-4.
Correct. Nobody. Nobody saw them in this position.
All right.
I know you liked Washington. You liked Washington more than I did, though, coming into the season, if I'm not mistaken.
No, Mike, I had them in the last.
I liked them more than I did.
I had Washington in 15th place, so I.
Okay, so you were a little bit off on that. I guess I maybe had them. I should have my paper in front of me, but
no, we also.
I think I had. I was higher on
Cleveland than you were, so I take a little bit of credit on that one. So,
well, the Wizards. I think what's been interesting is that it's the old when you trade a quote unquote superstar, and I think that's being kind at this point to Russell Westbrook and what he is, but theoretically, trading a superstar for pieces parts typically doesn't end up working out. But Westbrook is such a unique superstar, if you want to call him that. And I just think that what they got back, when you think about KCP, when you think about Harrell, when you think about Kuzma, and those are all guys that are competent NBA players. They're all playing probably better than any that they have at any point in their career. So Washington's deep. They're built for the regular season. I don't think this is a team that, even if they finish in the top half of the East, I don't think this is a team that's built for getting to the Eastern Conference Finals or getting to the NBA Finals in any way, shape, or form. Beal's been a little bit down from where he was last year, leading the league or second in the league in scoring at 31 a game, and he's down to about 23 a game, I think, at this point, not shooting it quite as well as he has been. So they've been doing it with depth and team play, and they're getting contributions all up and down the roster. Dinwiddie's been really good. But I just don't think that, look, it's not sustainable for them to finish first in the Eastern Conference. Are they going to be a team that can hold on to one of those top six spots? Maybe. I guess it depends on who you think is going to jump up and steal one of those spots, which as you look up and down the East, there's obviously some candidates that maybe could do that as we get into the second tier of teams. But I think for now, you got to give Washington credit for just being a team that comes out and competes. They traded a superstar in Russell Westbrook. They got back 50 cents on the dollar, and that 50 cents is working out way better for them than the dollar is for the Los Angeles Lakers at this point. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, Washington's really impressed me. Listen, obviously, I was really down on them. I guess I am going to eat crow multiple times this year.
Well, you don't have to yet, because I think it's – I mean, they could easily drop, though. They could easily drop.
They're not going to drop to 15. They've already won more games than Detroit's going to win all season.
Yeah, they're not going to drop to 15th. I will grant you that.
But listen, got to give them credit. Beals, you know, like you said, Beals kind of underperformed and they're still winning. I think the one thing that I kind of overlooked here, Mike, is, you know, the trade, and they got the pieces and the parts, but those pieces and parts have played together for a while. Like
right.
KCP, Kuzma, they've played together for a while. I'm sure, am I missing someone else in that? Who else was in that trade?
And Harrell was only there for one year.
But right. Still, like, they know each other, so there's not as much of a quote-unquote learning curve, because there are two teams that have played, or lots of players that have played together for, you know, multiple years. And then you throw Beal in there, and, I mean, Beal's a really good player. And like you said, he's played down this year, but at the same time, like,
he's still their best player. He's still their best player.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Washington, I don't think it's sustainable for them to finish one. I won't be surprised if they finish in the play-in spots when it's all said and done, because I think some other teams are probably going to move up the standings.
Yeah.
But I think Washington, with their start, has certainly played themselves into a position where it would be shocking if they don't finish at least in the play-in. Maybe I'm not giving them enough credit.
Do you want to pick a team in the Western Conference top six that – I mean, we spent a lot of time on Golden State. I think Dallas right now, with Luka being slightly injured, is kind of interesting. You know he got injured, right?
Yes. And they're also interesting because they're 9-4 and they have a negative point differential. Ooh, so you look at the teams that surround them: Golden State +13, Phoenix +5, Denver +4, Utah +6, Clippers +5, and then you have Dallas, the only team in that top six that has a negative point differential.
That kind of reminds me of the Cleveland Browns of last year, Mike. You know that, right?
There you go.
They were the first team in NFL history to win 11 games in a season and give up more points than they scored.
Yeah, nobody in the Eastern Conference has a negative point differential in that top six. So they're the only one of the top 12 teams across both conferences that have a negative point differential. So what does that say? It says either A, they're gutting out games and winning games that maybe they shouldn't. They're winning close games. Maybe they're losing blowouts, so that can impact your point differential. Luka has not been nearly as good, I think, as everybody thought he was going to be coming into the season. He's been good, but has not been transcendent the way that many people thought that he would. And yet they're still 9-4. So you can either look at that as a negative, that this team's kind of struggling and they just don't have it figured out. Or you can say they're kind of struggling and yet they're still able to win games. So Mike, it depends on how you look at it.
To put it in perspective, they lost the first game of the season by 26, and then they lost to Denver by 31. So, like, that goes a long way. And they lost the game by 15. So, like, all their losses, I mean, they've got four losses, right? All their losses have been by more than 10 points.
Yeah, well, that'll do it to you.
Yeah,
so that's why their point differential is negative.
And most of their wins are by single digits. You know, 1-3, that one's 16, 14, 10, 9, 5. So, like, when you look at that, I mean, that's what does it to you. When you have four losses all by double digits, including a 31 and a 27-pointer, I mean, that's pretty bad. And I think Porzingis has looked better. He's still not great, but he's definitely looked better. Do you agree with that?
He's been better. So his stats, he's averaging 19 a game, almost 8 rebounds, 22 PER. So he's been much, much better, I think, than he was at the end of the season. Look, if he's healthy, then I think that what you get from him can be something that can have a positive effect on Dallas's team. When he's not healthy, which It's been really hard to keep him healthy over the course of a season or over the course of a playoff run. They need, obviously, a healthy Porzingis in order for them to be able to reach their ceiling. It's a team that is really reliant on Luka's pick and roll and Luka's playmaking to set other guys up. And Porzingis, still as good as he's been to start the season, he still hasn't been able to approach what he did in short stretches when he was in New York before he had all the leg injuries. I think Dallas, if you could just bottle up what he's done in these first, in this first half of this season to this point, I think if they could just bottle that up and take it with them for the rest of the year, I think they would take 19-8 from Porzingis for the remainder of the year and put that in the bank if they knew he was going to be, if they knew he was going to be healthy for the rest of the season and on into the playoffs. So yeah, he's been better and that helps them. They're scuffling. You think about, I think it was, well, last year they were maybe fourth in the league in offense. Then the year before that was the year that they were number one overall and had the best offense historically from an efficiency standpoint in the history of the league. Of course, you have to take that into account with just kind of where the efficiency overall of offense has been. But they've sort of dropped off a little bit. And there's still, you can read different rumblings about some of the things that Coach Jason Kidd is doing, and people still aren't 100% sold. It's interesting just to hear some of the commentary and people talking about what style of offense he's running, what he's trying to do defensively, why is he giving Porzingis post-ups and getting this and that. And it's just, I don't know, there's a lot of Jason Kidd haters out there. I'm not saying I'm a Jason Kidd fan necessarily, but we're only, whatever, 14, 15 games into this. I think we'll eventually see where it goes. And Dallas has to keep Porzingis healthy, and Luka has to be better. I mean, he has to be better. He's got to get back to being at the very, very top of his game. And he's been good, but just not great.
Listen, I get it. I understand. All right, so let's, looking at the middle team. So let's, do you want to just agree on a team that we want to talk about from the middle team?
Just pick one out, man. Throw one out there.
Listen, I feel like I'm well-versed in the Boston Celtics, so I want to talk about the Boston Celtics because we watched them play the last two times.
Okay.
I do not like the body language of the Boston Celtics. You know, they did end up beating the Cavs last night, you know, Mobley being out, and they were just trying to figure it out, and people being out. I don't like the body language at all. I don't like the coach's body language. I don't understand. Like, I don't know if you watched the games. Did you watch either game?
I did.
Like, why is he sitting, like, he's not even sitting on the end of the bench. He's sitting, like, the third seat from the bench. And I know that's just a stupid semantic thing for me. But, like, why is he not on the end of the bench? And why is he not up more? I feel like every time they showed him on camera, he was sitting down. Whereas, like, you see JB Bickerstaff is constantly standing up. Most NBA coaches are constantly standing up. I don't like it. I don't like what I saw from them.
He's outside the box, man. He's coaching outside the box.
Oh, yeah. I just don't like the vibe. I don't like the way that they were very sloppy, like, both nights. I mean, they had a 19-point lead. They lost to the Cavs. I understand that we just played really, really well in the second half, but I just didn't.
Do you like Tatum? Do you think Tatum is he ever going to be a top 10 player in the league?
I mean,
I don't see it.
I'll be honest with you. I think Mobley has a better chance of being a top 10 player in the league than Tatum.
I agree.
I don't think so, Mike.
Tatum or Jaylen Brown?
I would take Tatum over Jaylen Brown. I just feel like I can trust him more on the offensive end. Jaylen Brown still, to me,
he's kind of mechanical. Jaylen Brown is much more mechanical, whereas Tatum is much more smooth. But I just look at Tatum, and I don't know, maybe it's just his sort of sleepy demeanor that I don't like, or I don't know. There's just something about his game that I don't enjoy watching him play, and I wouldn't want him to be the best player on my team. And if he is, I'm not sure what my ceiling is. And then Marcus Smart, look, I know he does a lot of great things for his team and he makes a lot of hustle plays, but if I was a fan of the Celtics, like, it would be infuriating to watch Marcus Smart play. because he does 9 good things and then he does like 4 like unbelievably stupid things in a row that just torpedo their chances. He's kind of like the poor man's Russell Westbrook in a lot of ways.
Yep. Yeah, I just agree with
that. Dumb decisions at dumb moments. Things that you're like, why is he doing that right at this time? And I know he does a lot of great things. I know he hustles. I know he works hard. I know he's a good defensive player. I know he can pass. I know he occasionally can make shots. But he's one of those. He's one of those no, 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 yes guys. That there's always a lot of no, 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 no. And it doesn't always end with a yes. A lot of times it ends with a no, 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 no. You just don't want him to be doing stuff. So, yeah, the Celtics are a weird team. I don't see them where they are now, what we've seen from them to this point in the season. I do not see them as one of the teams that can get up into the top 6. Do you?
No.
Okay, so let's look at the top. Let's just, since we're in this middle tier, let's look at the top 6 in the East right now currently is the Wizards, Bulls, Nets, Heat, Cavs, and Knicks. I don't see that being the final 6.
No.
That's going to end up. So
I think Milwaukee and Philly are locks in the top 6. They'll get up there.
Unless
Embiid is like
COVID. See, I don't think Philly's a lock at all. Just because of Embiid's injury situation. If Embiid goes down,
he might be in shape though now, Mike.
We're seeing it right now. They've lost 4 in a row.
He might be in shape, Mike.
He might, but
because he lost a lot of weight to COVID.
I would highly doubt it. I don't think Philly's a lock. I think Milwaukee is going to get up there. I honestly think Atlanta's going to get up there, even though they're not even in the second tier right now. So that's 2 teams. And then I think if you take the Wizards and the Cavs out of there, most likely, I think the other team that potentially could fall out is the Knicks. So I think the most likely candidates to jump in and take those spots are probably Atlanta, Milwaukee. And then, although I don't think Philly's a lock, I think if Embiid is able to play 60, 65 games, then I think Philly probably moves up into those spots. I expect Miami, Brooklyn, and the Bulls to stay in that top 6 based on what we've seen so far.
That's all fair assessments. And I listen, I want to be hopeful and keep hope alive that the Cavs will stay there, but they're just too injured right now. Like, I just don't see how it happens. I think by week's end, we might be in the 10th spot. You know, by the time we're recording next week, I think we're going to be in the 10th. There's a good chance we're going to be in the 10th, like 9th or 10th spot.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, we're all bunched together anyway, so I mean,
yeah, it's pretty close.
Listen, now we could be completely surprised and they can come out and beat Brooklyn because Brooklyn sleeps through warm-ups or something, or Kyrie gets his cronies over to do like Kumbaya, and then Kevin Durant and James Harden misses the game. I don't know. You never know what could happen. But so that's a, do you want to go to the Western Conference now? Western Conference middle tier?
Sure, let's do it.
I think we have to talk about a team we don't talk about very often. We talk about the Lakers at nauseam. We don't need to spend time on that. We talk about Portland. We've talked a little bit about Memphis. Let's talk about Sacramento, Mike. What do you think?
All right, let's talk Sacramento. Sure.
Sacramento.
Tell me about Sacramento.
Well, here's what I'm going to tell you about Sacramento. I thought Luke Walton would be fired. I don't think he's going to be fired because they've actually looked somewhat competitive this year, Mike. Now
they said on the mismatch today. I don't know if you listened to it at all.
No, I did not.
They said that had the Sacramento Kings not beaten the Pistons last night, that Luke Walton was going to be fired last night.
What?
Yep.
I mean, they had lost 4 in a row, but I feel like Sacramento's at least been somewhat competitive.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing for Sacramento. I think in order to really accurately discuss Sacramento, we have to discuss the teams that are currently below Sacramento. And then that will allow you to better appreciate the Sacramento Kings. So let's work our way from the bottom of the Western Conference. The Houston Rockets.
Pitiful.
They have no chance. They may.
Will they get the double-digit approach? Wins.
They may approach the Charlotte Bobcats of Kemba Walker 9-73. There is a decent chance that they're going to, or I'm sorry, that was the Sixers. And then the Bobcats ended up having the worst winning percentage because that was during the shortened season. But anyway, they are bad. They are running Kevin Porter Jr. out there as a point guard, which I think is fine in spot minutes, but he's your guy that you're basically giving him the keys to your offense. You have Jalen Green, who's a really good rookie with a lot of potential, but still a 19-year-old rookie. Christian Wood is really their best, most serviceable, quote-unquote, veteran player. And he's a good player, but that team's a mess. So they're going to stay where they are at the bottom. New Orleans, a complete mess, although they did say today that Zion's going to begin basketball activities. He's going to be playing some one-on-one in the next day or two. So good for him.
Whoever he plays, better watch out. He might try to eat him.
But let's put it this way. Zion's got a long way to go to come back to be able to right the ship with that team. Plus, they're already 2-13. So I think we can safely say that New Orleans is going to finish outside the play-in. San Antonio,
Is Pop done? Are we ready to say it's time for him to hang it up?
You'd have to think that he's got to be getting close to the end of his tenure in terms of what he wants to deal with, right? It can't be fun to have gone from basically winning year in and year out every single year, and now there's not really much there. They have some guys that are young that are decent players, but they don't have any, there's no foundational piece in place for San Antonio. I mean, I think DeJounte Murray is a good player, probably a really good player, but he's not good enough to build your team around. And until they find a guy, you might as well forget it. Minnesota, they just seem like they're a mess. And they're 4-9.
Man, I feel like 2 weeks ago you were all about Minnesota, Mike.
They started out really well, right? They started out, they're 2-8.
They were 3-1.
Right, they're 2-8 since then, and it just seems like all the problems that they've had in the past.
One of those victories was over the Lakers.
Well, there's a lot of teams that have victories over the Lakers. I just think Minnesota, I mean, I don't know what it is, but it just seems like for whatever reason that it's kind of a star-crossed franchise at this point. And Anthony Edwards is a really good player. Karl Anthony Towns is at least a good offensive player. D'Angelo Russell, we kind of know what he is on the offensive end, although he hasn't been great this season. They have some role players. We talked about Chris Finch and the belief that people have in him around the league as a coach. But for whatever reason, it just seems like things are not going well. I would anticipate that.
Culver's not even on the roster?
They traded him. He got traded to Memphis.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I was like,
wow, he was part of the Pat Beverly trade, right? Because Beverly had gone to Memphis, I think. Isn't that who they traded him
for?
I could be wrong.
Culver's in Memphis. He's averaging a grand total of 4 points per game. Oof.
Yeah, that was not one of my better calls. That was not one of my better calls in the draft.
Sorry, Darius Garland. I apologize.
Yeah, definitely Darius Garland was a much better pick. So somebody in the Cavs organization knew more than to listen to the Hoopheads. Oklahoma City has won 5 games. I don't anticipate that they are going to climb their way into the play-in, which means almost by default, Sacramento has a decent chance of...
basically saying that Sacramento is the top of the poopery platter?
By default, they should have a decent chance. At worst, they should be... Which one of those 5 teams do you think has the best chance of...
Minnesota.
I agree. I think Minnesota has the most talent. I think if they could figure out how to put it together, I think they're the other team that could compete. But Sacramento, when you think about De'Aaron Fox, you think about Halliburton, you think about Buddy Hield, you think about Harrison Barnes, they have NBA talent. They have guys that theoretically should be able to compete for the number 10 seed in the Western Conference. So I would expect them to stay there. Who knows? The Luke Walton stuff, I don't know how true that was about him being fired if they had lost to the Pistons last night. If that's really the case, then you would have to think he's skating on very, 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 very thin ice and that he's probably not going to be long for that job. And you and I have never been overly impressed with Luke Walton as a coach. So maybe You fire him, you bring in somebody else. Although, again, mid-season, those mid-season coaching changes usually aren't super effective. It seems like if you wanted to get rid of Luke Walton, that in the offseason would have been the better time to do it. They've buried completely Marvin Bagley, doesn't even play at all, which you wonder, is that strictly coaching? Is there somebody in that organization that wants Marvin Bagley to play and Luke Walton isn't playing him? Is it, what's the deal with Bagley? He's a guy who clearly needs a change of scenery. I mean, I doubt he's ever going to amount to or live up to his number two pick in the draft billing, but it seems like the guy probably should have a career somewhere. I think it's the first time, though, honestly, that you can look at it. You can say the West, I think the West is worse. I think the East is better. The East is better than the West at this point. I think it's finally flipped.
Yay. And right? It's nice to have the Cleveland Cavaliers a part of that, Mike.
Absolutely. I mean, the Cavs are going to be competitive all year. Like, I know we're talking about their schedule, and
it evens out eventually, Mike. It eventually evens out, right?
It does. But I do think that the Cavs are going to be competitive in a lot of those games, even if they end up losing to some of these top-tier teams. It's not going to be a walkover. The Cavs are not going to be a team that other teams are circling on their schedule going, oh, that's going to be an easy win. We're going to just walk into Cleveland, or they're going to walk into our arena, and we're going to just mop the floor with those teams, with the Cavs. It's just not going to happen. The Cavs are going to be competitive all year, unless a couple more guys go down with injuries. It seems like we've had some bad injury and COVID luck to this point in the season. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right. So now we've talked about the five lower seeds in the West. So should we just do the five lower seeds in the East and then we call it a night?
Yeah, let's finish off. Yeah.
So, all right. So we'll start Orlando. I still don't understand their roster at all. I'll be honest with you when I say I have not watched a minute of Orlando basketball this season. I will say I will get to do that in a week and a half when the Cavs play them. But I've not watched any Magic basketball. I honestly couldn't even tell you, like...
Well, here's what's happening with Orlando. So I think there's two things that have happened that if you're an Orlando fan, you have to at least be
semi-happy
about. Cole Anthony. So Cole Anthony for the season is averaging 20 a game. He's averaging 6.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists. So,
and he's really good at post-game press conferences. I know that.
He is. So he's clearly – he's stepped up in a way that I don't know that people thought coming off of his rookie year that he was going to get to this level this fast. And again, I don't know what this level means because you're on a 3-11 team. Somebody has to score. But he is right now. He's shooting almost 40% from three. He shoots 85% from the line. He's got a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. He's been really good. And that's something that bodes well. Now, what's interesting is you also have Jalen Suggs on this team who was drafted sort of de facto to be able to take over that point guard position. And Suggs, unfortunately, has not been nearly as good. Suggs is averaging 11 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists. And he's not shooting the ball very well. He's shooting 31% from the field, 20% from three. He is shooting 83% from the line, but he's struggled. And he's a guy who's getting minutes. He's playing almost 28 minutes a game. And to this point, he just really isn't producing much of anything. And then the other guy that sort of brought things together and has made a jump from basically being nothing is Mo Bamba. And you can kind of laugh at Bamba, and he's been a guy that's been out of the rotation, but he's averaging 12 points, 10 rebounds, making some threes. He's gone from being a complete zero to being a guy who at least is going to be out on the floor and can be productive for you. He's averaging 30 minutes a game for the Magic, shooting almost 36% from three. He reminds me a little bit, and just not necessarily as a player, but just when you think about statistically the kind of guy that he can be, and I guess because he's shooting more threes, but I look at his stat line, a guy who's going to average 12, 13 points a game and get you 10 rebounds, kind of in that Tristan Thompson type mold where he's a guy who you're not going to really rely on him to do much offensively, but he can grab some boards for you and hopefully he can do some things on the defensive end of the floor with his length and block some shots. He's averaging almost 2.5 blocks this season. So you went from having a guy who was giving you nothing to a guy who's probably going to carve out an NBA career for himself. And you wonder how much of that had to do with Steve Clifford, and he just got off on the wrong foot with him and just never was able to earn his trust. And now you bring in a new coach and suddenly things change and are a little bit different. So there are some things for Magic fans to possibly look forward to. Plus, you still have Markelle Fultz and Jonathan Isaac who are on the roster but are currently injured and not playing. So eventually, hopefully you'll get there. And Franz Wagner has been good as well as a rookie. As bad as Suggs has been, I think Wagner's been, as advertised, sort of a multi-dimensional guy that can do lots of different things on the floor. So it speaks to the fact that all these teams, even the bad teams, are kind of interesting because they have all these different guys that you just want to watch and see what they can become and see what they can do. And that's what makes the league interesting. I think Detroit's the same way. Like, Cade is going to be good. He had 25, 8, and 8 last night against Sacramento. So
he's definitely looked better.
He's coming around. And you can see when you watch him, you can see what he does well. I think the thing with him that makes you wonder about his ceiling is the same questions that you heard pre-draft was he's not – his athleticism doesn't jump off the TV screen at you. He's not a high-flying guy. He's not unbelievably quick. He doesn't look overly physical. He just strikes me as a guy who knows how to play basketball and is smart. And you wonder, without that kind of elite athleticism, does that limit what his ceiling is? And you could look at a guy like Luka and say, well, Luka's not an elite athlete in terms of being able to run and jump with a lot of the guys in the league, but he's so good fundamentally and through basketball IQ that he's still able to be a superstar. Maybe Cade is going to be the same way. It's interesting, though, the way we look at guys who are superstars and how the league has changed over the years, that those guys who, even if they are project as being great, great, great players, they still, if you go to a bad team, they still have very little impact on winning because the league in itself is so good. You don't have a guy walking in and suddenly turning a team around from being a basement dweller to being a team that's in the upper echelon of the NBA. It just doesn't happen anymore. As good as what?
We got breaking news.
Okay.
Shams is reporting that Staples Centers is changing its name to the Crypto.com Arena.
Are you serious?
Staples Center is the iconic home of the Los Angeles Lakers and Clippers, among others, since 1999. Will have a new name beginning December 25th. Crypto.com Arena. It's believed to be the largest U.S. venue naming rights deal to date.
We couldn't get Smoothie King.
So I just thought, I saw that and I had to say it.
Had to interject it. All right, well, good for, I guess, Jeannie Buss and the Lakers putting some money in their pocket with a lucrative stadium sponsorship deal. So congratulations crypto.com.
Maybe the lucrative deal can turn into a lucrative deal.
Maybe the Lakers are going to start paying all their players in cryptocurrency. How about that?
Ooh, sponsorship deals. I saw some people were getting paid with Bitcoin for some sponsors deal. I don't know.
All right, there you go. So maybe the Lakers are going to be the first team to go all crypto.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
You're saying no. You're saying no.
No. I don't think so. All right. So the other Eastern Conference teams that are in the bottom: Indiana, Atlanta, and Milwaukee. I mean, I think Milwaukee's going to be up in the top six by the end of this. They're barely out, quite frankly. You know, that's, like I said, they're all bunched together. All these teams are bunched together. I mean, the difference between – that's what's crazy. When you look at the Eastern and the Western Conference, Mike, like the Eastern Conference, the first seed and 13 is not really – I mean, it's like four games. Like, it's not that much. Whereas when you look at the West, I mean, obviously – Golden State's 12-2, and that's a huge jump. But even like from, you know, let's put it this way:
Detroit and Orlando, I think, are better than New Orleans and Houston at this point.
I think Detroit's better than New Orleans. I think they're better than Houston. I could make the argument they're better than Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City just got lucky that Oklahoma City actually, I shouldn't say they got lucky. They're unlucky that they've won five games already.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not good news for them. I mean, they basically aren't playing SGA a ton of minutes and they're still winning. That's bad news for them. Anyways, so I don't know. Do we have anything to say about Indiana, Atlanta, and Milwaukee? I think we are in agreement that those three teams are better than what they're playing at right now, right?
Yeah, I think Atlanta and Milwaukee are definitely going to move up. I will be surprised. Clearly, Milwaukee's going to figure it out and get up into the top six. I think Atlanta eventually figures it out here. You saw DeAndre Hunter went out with, I think, a wrist. Is that what it? I think he broke his wrist.
He may as well always be injured. He's injured all the time. He hurt his back before, his wrist.
Yeah,
what was he out for last year?
I don't even remember, but he's going to miss 8 weeks with a torn or needing to repair a tendon in his right wrist. I thought that's what I had seen. So that's correct. So he is out. So in a way, one of the problems that they had is just they almost have too many guys, especially on the wing, that they just don't have minutes for. And so taking Hunter out of the equation at least frees up some minutes and maybe stabilizes their rotation and they get it figured out. And I think Trae Young and John Collins and that roster is too good for them to finish at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. I don't expect that to be where they end up. I think they're going to end up in the top six. And then I think obviously Milwaukee's going to. And Indiana, I don't know. I guess I lump them in. I think they're sort of in that tier with Toronto, Charlotte. I'm still not as high on Charlotte as a lot of other people. I think that they kind of caught lightning in a bottle here at the beginning of the season. I think they're going to hang around that 9 through 11, 12 spot. I don't think they're a team that's going to threaten to make it up into the top six. So Indiana's kind of in that middle tier where I think they'll be fighting for one of the play-in spots as the season wears along. They have talent, but I'm not sure that that team, again, when you have Miles Turner and Sabonis together, nobody's really been able to figure that out. Carlisle to this point, maybe he's still experimenting and trying to figure out exactly what he has and trying to mix lineups. And Duarte as a rookie has been really good. But that team still, to me, I look at them and I smell middle of the pack for Indiana.
Yep. You know, maybe a 9 or a 10 seed, maybe an 8 seed.
They could fight their way into the play-in, but they are not a threat to get into the top six, I don't think.
No, I agree. I agree with that.
They're much more likely to finish 11th than they are 6th, I would say.
All right. I've got one more stat I just came across that I want to read to you that's unrelated to what we're talking about.
Sure.
But goes back to something we talked about earlier with Steph Curry. Steph Curry is currently on pace to make 445 three-pointers this season. When he set the all-time record of 402, he smashed his own previous record of 286. Steph eclipsing 402 by that much, 10.7%, would be the equivalent of breaking Wilt's record of 50.4 points per game by averaging 55.8 points per game. What do you think about all that?
Look, Steph's an incredible shooter, right? We talked about it off the top.
Is he the greatest shooter of all time, Mike?
Yeah, there's no question.
So he's more better than Ray Allen. You're willing to say that now?
Absolutely. I mean, okay. I don't think there's any doubt. There's never been a guy who can shoot the ball off the dribble and off the catch equally as well as he can. Plus, I think one of the things that's underrated about Steph's game is just the fact that he's been able to not only shoot his jump shot, which is clearly what he's known for, but I think as he's gotten older, he's been able to figure out ways to get to the basket. And he's so crafty off the glass and with different floaters and runners and different angles that he releases the ball from. And I've said it before on the show, but I think one of the things that I really like about Steph, and I go back to the pre-Cavs Warriors time when we spent 5 years sort of having a lot of disdain for Steph and the Warriors. But prior to them meeting in the finals so many times, I've said that Curry was probably my favorite player to watch when he was a young player just because of the way he moved and his footwork and the work that he did off the ball, trying to get open and screening and just ball movement. And he does things that other guys, other superstars, other shooters aren't necessarily willing to do. And that's what makes him so hard to guard. In addition to his unbelievable shooting, it's just his footwork and the way that he works off screens and the way he sets himself up and the way he's always on balance and just he knows where to be. He's always, always thinking ahead. He's always one step ahead of the defense. He's always got a little fake here or a feint there that gets him open. And if you're a basketball player and you want to know what to do with your feet, there's no better guy. There's nobody better to watch tape of than Steph Curry if you're somebody who wants to be a great shooter. And you're never going to replicate what Steph does with his actual shooting, but the footwork piece of it and just sort of that indefatigable drive to keep moving makes him really, really hard to guard. Sometimes just moving is enough to get you open. And I think that's an underrated part of his game is he's always moving. And then he doubles that with a great basketball IQ and great footwork and just knowing where to be and how to get there. He's the best shooter ever. I don't know how you could argue against it. I mean, obviously the game is different. So guys in the past that were great shooters weren't shooting at the same volume level that Steph is shooting. They weren't given the opportunity to take some of the shots that he does. But the reality is there was a reason why they weren't taking those shots back then, because they weren't going to make them at the same rate that Curry was. And he's also unique because he really set off this whole revolution of guys shooting from deep, right? Nobody prior to Steph, I guess every once in a while at a buzzer beater, somebody would fire one up from far away. But to have it be a regular part of what you do, Steph ushered that era in. And he's been a trailblazer in that respect. And nobody's ever shot the ball better, both off the catch and off the dribble. Plus, you add in, like I said earlier, all his little floaters and shots in the lane where he's using different angles off the glass and different release points. There's nobody that's been able to shoot a wider array of shots than Steph Curry in the history of the game.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, he obviously, you know what, is the heel to the Cavs. Him and the Warriors are the heels of the Cavs. And I've said this multiple times, I'll say it again. I think in an alternate universe, I would have been a huge Golden State Warrior fan. I really genuinely believe that. If it wasn't for the Cavs, I think I would have been in that 2015 to 2018 range. You know, maybe not so much with the whole Kevin Durant thing, more of the 2014, 2015, 2016 seasons. I think I would have definitely been a huge, huge Warriors fan. So, all right, Mike, let's just rip the Band-Aid off real quick. I don't need to spend a lot of time on this. The Browns are pitiful. That was god-awful. Bill Belichick still just knows how to do things. And we just looked like a disaster. We looked like we were ready to play. I understand that our running back situation wasn't ideal, but we completely abandoned the game plan after the first drive. Once again, listen, I don't know what it is about the Browns in the first drive, Mike, but they know how to script a good drive, and then they don't know how the heck to adjust after that. So that's what I'm going to say. They were god-awful. That defense is terrible. I don't care what statistics tell me. My eyes tell me I needed, like, to wash them out with bleach. Like, I felt like I had dumped bleach in my eyes every time they were on the defensive end of the field. God-awful. Go ahead, Mike. Real quick. I think I said it all, but go ahead.
Well, the stench of Odell Beckham Jr. being eradicated from the building obviously didn't help them to perform any better, although he did bring his stink to Los Angeles, so that was good to see. As far as the Browns go, I agree with you defensively. Every time you look up, the other team just goes down the field. It seems like we never get off the field on third down. Whenever we need a big play, it just doesn't happen in the moment on the defensive end of the field. And we're going against a rookie quarterback. And granted, a rookie quarterback who's had a good year and has played well and is well coached, but still a rookie quarterback. And for them to hang 45 points on this Browns defense, that's embarrassing. And then on the other end of the field, when you talk about offense, I'll say this about Baker Mayfield. One, the guy's obviously hurt, and he's obviously playing through pain. He's playing through injury, And for that, I give him a ton of credit. I give him credit for his toughness. There were a couple passes that he threw on Sunday that Njoku dropped the touchdown pass, although we ended up getting the touchdown on that first drive anyway. It seems like when he does make a good pass, his receivers drop the ball. But the good passes that he makes are so few and far between. You look at some of the throws that Mac Jones had, and the ball just drops into a receiver's hands. And I just don't see Mayfield ever making those throws. I just don't see the same level of competency that I see from the top tier of quarterbacks. It just doesn't seem like Baker's able to make those throws. And maybe that's because of injury. And like I said, I give him credit for gutting it out. There'd be a lot of guys that at this point would already packed it in. So kudos to him for being tough. Kudos to him for trying to play through it and give his team a chance to win with their starting quarterback out on the field. But he just doesn't perform in the way that you'd want a top-tier quarterback to perform. And this team, until you get Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt back and those two guys are at full capacity, this team offensively just isn't going to be able to cut it. And defensively, I'm not sure what you do, because at this point you can't really change the personnel, and it just doesn't seem like they have it. Let's put it this way. I think they're number one. There's two questions or two things that I think in the offseason that they have to address. I guess defensively, there's probably a lot of things, but I think they need to draft it. You got to draft a receiver. You got to have a good receiver on the field. It just seems like the guys we have are at best mediocre. And then I think the second question obviously is, do you re-sign Baker? And I'm glad I'm not the one having to make that decision, because you think about all the quarterbacks.
I think you franchise tag him, like,
one. Right, I agree.
I think they're going to franchise tag him for a year and then figure it out after that. Because the thing is, Mike, I don't really know what their options are other than that. Are you really going to get Aaron Rodgers to come to Cleveland? No. Are you going to get Russell Wilson to come to Cleveland? No. I just don't see that happening. Jimmy Garoppolo, maybe we could get him somehow, but he's been linked to Cleveland for like 10 years at this point. Like, come on now.
Right. And is he an upgrade?
I don't think he's an upgrade. Although he looked darn good last night, because they just ran off a really good offense. And here, listen, this is the thing. I don't think Nick Chubb changes the outcome of that game. But having Nick Chubb, completely not having Nick Chubb and having four running backs out, completely changed the game planning aspect of things. And you saw the first drive, we had the defense on the heels. We had the Patriots defense on the heels the first drive. And then we completely abandoned the run. And it did come down to Baker threw that terrible pass, which I still have no clue where he was throwing that one. Like, at least when he's thrown bad passes before, like, you could at least make an argument as to what he was doing. I have no idea what he was doing on that pick six. Or it wasn't a pick six. It may as well have been a pick six, because it went to, the 1 yard line or whatever. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what – I mean, the Browns are going to end 5, maybe 9-8 this season. Their schedule's rough.
Let's leave it here. It would be awful Brownsy for them to lose to the Lions this week. How about that?
Oh, no, Mike.
Let's leave it there.
That's the end of the podcast. We'll see you next week. Thanks for joining us on the Hoopheads podcast.
Next week, we'll be talking about a very Brownsy loss to the Detroit Lions. On that note, thanks for checking out our NBA episode. Make sure you check out our other episodes this week. We dropped a roundtable on Monday, where our coaches talked about who they'd want to have sitting next to them on the bench as their assistant coach. And coming up on Friday, we will have Coach Matt Monroe from St. Ignatius Prep in Chicago. Great interview, that one. So make sure you check those out, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.